Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to a Raptors Reaction Podcast Classic. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined this week to revisit another loss, unfortunately, for the Raptors, but a very memorable one. The game where Jeremy Lin, at the height of Lin's sanity, hits the game winner over Jose Calderon at the Air Canada Center, and the whole crowd goes wild. Well, maybe the half of the crowd goes wild. This is on Valentine's Day. And of course, I'm joined by a fellow Asian to discuss this. Alex, how you doing?
Wow, didn't even introduce me as the host of Stephen LeBron Radio. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, first off, we should note that we are actually doing two classic reaction podcasts. One for this podcast, Raptors Over Everything, and another one for the Stephen LeBron Radio podcast. Alex, and what game are we going to be recapping on your show?
So for this Asian Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons podcast crossover, we will be doing the Linsanity game against the Lakers when Kobe Bryant said he didn't know who Jeremy Lin was.
Yeah, and Jeremy Lin put 38. This one was two games after that Laker game. So the Knicks went to... No, they played at home to Minnesota. That was the Kevin Love, Ricky Rubio years. And they overcame Minnesota at the very end, and Jeremy had a bad shooting night, but they ultimately won. So to put some context here, so the Raptors lose 90-87 on February 14th, 2012. The Knicks at this time, this is the truncated season, so the Knicks were only 14-15 at the time. The Raptors somehow were already 9-21. Incredible. And, you know, the Jeremy Lin story, we told, you know, it's been told many times, but just to give a quick summary at this point, you know, the Knicks suffered an injury to Carmelo Anthony. They were already kind of losing at the time. They had high expectations. They were going to go to the playoffs. They really wanted to, like, make a deep run. Their point guard situation was pretty bad because they traded for Chauncey Billups the year before in that Melo deal that was orchestrated by Masai. But Chauncey moves on. They don't really have a point guard. Guys get hurt, and Jeremy Lin, the third stringer out of the G League, or at the D League at the time, comes in and becomes a star. Jeremy ends up leading them to, I think, seven straight wins and really turns the season around for them. And this was towards the end of that, really, where, you know, the Knicks had already won five in a row. Jeremy Lin got Player of the Week honors the week before this. He averaged 27 points per game in four wins. And coming to Toronto, you know, really, the Raptors should have won this game. Can we start there? Like, they should have won this game. Like, period. They outplayed the Knicks for like 40 plus minutes. They just choked, which is literally what all classic Raptor games are, basically.
Yeah, and you know, I think we'll get into it, but I only watched the first half of this game in real time when it happened, and because the Raptors were dominating the first half and Jeremy Lin wasn't really doing much, and I had another obligation that I had to go to. So this was my first time over the weekend watching this entire game live, and especially the second half. And number one, this was a trash game. I think I was expecting some kind of classic, you know, really crazy run in the fourth quarter. But like you said, the Raptors were leading the whole way. The Knicks were playing terrible. Clyde Frazier was calling their defense Swiss cheese in the third quarter, and they just blew it. Like, Jeremy hit a huge shot, obviously, at the end. But the Knicks had no business winning this game at all.
Yep. Yep. Like, none. Like, it was bad. Like, you know what? Actually... So I'll give Dwayne Casey credit for this, because he correctly identified that you need to shut down Jeremy Lin, because pretty much without Carmelo on the team, the rest of the Knicks didn't really have that many playmakers. So what the Raptors did was, from the very start of the game, they trapped Jeremy Lin. They doubled the ball, basically gave him the Steph Curry treatment, which honestly at the time, given how hot Jeremy Lin was, kind of made sense to treat him like Steph. But you got guys like Aaron Gray on the perimeter. You got guys like Amir Johnson on the perimeter. And the whole idea was just to trap Jeremy, let him get rid of the ball, and let the other guys make a play. And, you know, Amari, he was coming off, I think he had missed a couple of games due to a death in the family, and he was rusty. And he wasn't really able to score in the way that Amari normally could. He's a pretty good scorer. And then Tyson Chandler, whatever, he's not really going to put the ball on the floor. He's just going for layups. So it was working. It was working for most of the game. And, you know, Jeremy Lin had like 5 turnovers and 9 points in the first half. Jeremy ends up having a career high in turnovers in that game, I think 8. And there's even plays where, like, again, Jose Calderon is just straight up clamping Jeremy Lin. Like, it was actually funny to watch. You and I watched this yesterday on a live stream of the MSG Network somehow, because this is the only way to find old games. And you were asking me, like, how the hell does Jeremy Lin have 20 and 10 right now? Because it was like a super ugly game. And, you know, for that time, the Raptors really did defend really well, which is kind of why they hired Dwayne Casey, was to sort of shore up the defense.
Yeah, so this was the first season of Dwayne coaching for the Raptors. And a neat moment before the game too, right? Mm-hmm. He's presented with his championship ring from Tyson Chandler, because they were both on the Mavericks the year before, which is really cool. But yeah, we should talk about some of these Raptors, man. Mm-hmm. Like, Jose Calderon had a monster game. And you were saying, the last possession of the first half, Jeremy's going at him with the shot clock running down, and Calderon just straight up blocks him. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, I did flashback to the time when the Spanish national team all pulled their Asian slanted eyes and took the infamous photo. So I was getting increasingly angry at Calderon as he was putting the clamps on Lin. But, man, just what a sad franchise at the time. Like, you know, on the broadcast with Breen and Clyde Frazier, they're talking about how the Raptors are averaging, first of all, 88 points a game on the season.
Like,
can someone, like, actually fact check this? Because I honestly did not believe that. And they were struggling on offense because they were without their leading scorer, Andrea Bargnani.
I mean, wow. Yeah, this is the thing. These Classic Reaction podcasts, originally I had high hopes for them, but I realized most of them are going to be a lot of losses. So the Raptors did marginally improve their offense as the season went on. They finished the year averaging 90.7 points per game, which ranked 28th in the NBA. So somehow there were actually two other teams worse than 90.7. That sounds like a FM radio station. Yeah, the roster. I mean, yeah, Andrea Bargnani was the leading scorer. He only played half the season. He played in 31 games. He averaged 19 points, and you know, I mean, it was Bargnani, so I really feel like he's still hurting the team despite averaging that many. But yeah, like as you mentioned, man, there's just not a lot of offense on this team. Like, it was either him or DeMar DeRozan, with Jose Calderon sort of pulling the strings. And DeMar was just so bad in this game that, if Jose wasn't as good as he was in this game, the Raptors have really no business even winning it themselves. Even though defensively they played really well, it's just like offensively it was such a struggle. And Jose, I mean, I was pretty impressed with Jose because, yeah, he was carrying this team. Like, the game before this, he scores, I believe, a career-high 30 points, you know, against the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, that game, the Raptors lost, but Jose has 30. The Raptors are in the game late. They're up 4 with under a minute left. They're in Toronto. And, you know, Jack Armstrong's yelling on the broadcast, "No threes, no threes." And, of course, Kobe immediately hits a three. So the Raptors are only up 1. Then Linus Klaza tries to attack on the baseline and force a shot. Like, again, we're talking about end of the game, last minute of the game against the Lakers with Kobe on them. Klaza is the one they're going to. He gets stripped by Kobe because he's trying to force the ball, and then they go the other way, and Kobe passes to Meta on trailing on the break. They go in the lead. Somehow the Raptors get the lead back, and, you know, 7 seconds left, the Lakers have the ball. Of course, the inbound of Kobe. Basically, similar to the Kawhi play where Kobe dribbles to the right corner and then fades away over James Johnson. Again, that's our guy. That's our go-to defender at the time was James Johnson. And Kobe hits the game winner. And then on the ensuing possession, because the Raptors still have 4 seconds left with the inbound down 1, and they bring in Rasul Butler, who fails to inbound the ball within 5 seconds. So, like, just again, you just got to think about the context of what's happening here. You're relying on Jose Calderon to have 30 points to have a chance to win. You're relying on Linus Klaza to be your go-to scorer in crunch time. You're relying on James Johnson as your go-to defender, and your most trusted inbounder. Remember last year, it was Mark freaking Gasol inbounding the ball. All right, now it's Rasul Butler instead, who's on the brink of retiring from the NBA, and he fails to inbound the ball within 5 seconds, which is just a cardinal sin, man. How do you commit a 5 second violation when that happens? So, yeah, so this is a tough time, and of course, this game was also very tough. But yeah, I mean, you know, Jose coming off the 30-point game was really, really good in this one as well. He has 25 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, a block, and like he was really just. He was giving it to Jeremy, like, for most of the game. And he was outplaying Jeremy. And, it was really just the rest of the guys around him couldn't score. Like, I was really shocked, for example, about DeMar DeRozan. To see how polished he is now versus what he did back then, which was just, like, put his head down and then barrel to the basket, fall over, miss a layup, and then the other team goes in for a transition bucket because they're outnumbered. I'm like, how many times? It happened at least, like, 5-6 times.
Yeah, watching this game really reaffirmed why at the time I kept telling people that Sonny Weems was going to be better mm-hmm. than DeMar. Like, same. DeMar was just out of control. And it's funny, I mean, I text you about this yesterday, to think about how Masai turned basically Andrea Bargnani and DeMar DeRozan into Kawhi Leonard is incredible.
Yeah, well.
And we gotta talk about Leandro Barbosa too, man. He was nice in this game.
See, this is the thing with the old Raptors is you okay? Yeah, let's talk about the bench. So, your man Leandro Barbosa, watching this game, because I just seen the box score just now before we started the podcast. Watching this game, it felt like Barbosa was like a lifeline for them because he could actually get a shot. But then when I'm looking at it now, Barbosa plays 31 minutes, shoots 5 of 13 from the field, 4 of 13 points. Still a little bit of that, you know, Brazilian blur. You know, he had a couple of plays where he was just isolated out top and just blow past people. He still had that quickness. That first step was still elite. But yeah, this was by no means not a good year for Leandro. He ends up getting traded at the trade deadline, like maybe a week after this, to the Indiana Pacers for a top 55 protected second round pick.
Nah, man. What kind of protection is that, man?
Yo, I'm pretty sure they're trying to get another Roko Ukic with that top 55 protected pick. But yeah, what did you like from Leandrino, the blur?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Like you said, like he was showing flashes of what made him so special when he was part of those 7 seconds or less Suns teams. And he just really stood out in the fourth quarter. Because in the fourth quarter, when the Knicks were making their comeback, Jose Calderon, like, went scoreless in the entire quarter, and the whole Raptors team was just struggling to score, and I felt like he was creating things. And there was a huge turning point. My first TSN turning point was with 4 minutes left when the Raptors were up 86-77. And keep in mind, the Raptors end up with 87 points. Mm. So from here on out, they make one Linus Klaza free throw. And that is the rest of their scoring. So they're up 86-77, and like we were saying, they have been basically leading the entire game. And the Knicks had made a couple of runs, but never really got close. And Barbosa gets this steal at half court, but he can't stay in bounds. So the ball gets back to the Knicks, and that's when they start making their push. And I felt like that was a possession where the Raptors lost the game because, you know, if Barbosa gets the ball and goes down and gets a layup, they go out double digits. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think that would be enough, even though the Raptors' offense just went silent the rest of the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? As we described earlier, guys like Leandro Barbosa and Linus Klaza were counted on as the go-to options at the end of games. And this is partially why the Raptors were so, I mean, even before the playoff stuff, just like before they could even get to the playoffs, part of the reason they used to not get to the playoffs was because they used to always choke. The Raptors have an incredible history of choking in the regular season before, obviously, you know, the We the North era happened and they started doing some of that in the playoffs. But yeah, like they just had, I mean, like the Rudy Gay videos, you know, not this guy, not this guy. I don't know if that was this season, but it was probably around this time because obviously Rudy came to Toronto. But yeah, they just didn't have a guy who could execute down the stretch to give you buckets. So even if they were in the lead, chances were that they were going to blow it. Like that Kobe 81 game, for example. Obviously, this is like maybe 5-6 years before this game, Jeremy Lin game took place. But same kind of deal. Raptors up like 20-something in the third quarter, and they can't hold it because they have nobody to go to. And yeah, as you mentioned, their offense gets ice cold. And part of the reason the offense went ice cold was because rookie Iman Shumpert came into the game and locked down Jose Calderon, like put the clamps to him. Like at one point, he stripped him in the open court and took it in for a layup, like that kind of like clamp. So when that happened, basically the Raptors had no more offense. And when you think about it, how are you getting clamped by a rookie? How's that like? Like I don't even understand this, man. Like it's unbelievable how bad this team was at this time, or just like basically just the situation they were in, you know, and. A guy like Leandro Barbosa, for example, for this team, you know, I remember watching this season and just thinking, like, why are they going to Leandro Barbosa all the time? First off, he was only on the team because they needed to shed Hedo Turkoglu's contract. So they need to get something in return. So they got Barbosa. And then it was clear that he wasn't the future of this team. Like, at least, like, the future of the team is DeMar DeRozan, Amir Johnson, maybe even James Johnson at the time. You know, those were kind of their prospects. So why wouldn't you try to funnel possessions towards them? But instead, they were really force-feeding Leandro Barbosa. And this is what I mean by that. Barbosa on that season for the Raptors, that 11-12 season, had a usage rate of 28%. To put that put that into perspective, Pascal Siakam this year has a usage rate of 28%. They were giving him Pascal Siakam treatment in the offense, and we're talking about a guy who I was like, okay, you know what, at least if they're gonna force feed him the ball and you're gonna get some good stats, maybe you can trade him to a contender at the deadline and get something out of it, because he's also an expiring contract. And like I mentioned, he was traded to the Pacers for a top 55 protected pick. So they got nothing out of this. So anyway, this is a very sad year for the Raptors, but Leandro was a bright spot on the team. Linus Klaza, a little surprised by him too, because I remember him just being really, really not effective as a Raptor. And in this game, he was just like pure bricks when he first came into the game. He kept shooting with confidence. You said he was Mario Hezonja circa 2012. I agreed with you wholeheartedly, but yeah, he was really good in this game. Say some nice things about Linus Klaza, please.
Yeah, so Linus is a 2012 Mario Hezonja in Minnesota Kevin Love's body, basically. That's who he was. I don't know, man. Like, he's just the exact type of player that I remember watching. Like, he was just always looking for his own shot, wildly overconfident. And yep. I'm kind of with you in that I just didn't understand. And maybe because now that you mentioned that it was close to the trade deadline, maybe they were trying to, you know, highlight guys like Barbosa and Klaza. But was DeMar even on the court at the end of the game? He was, right?
He was.
Actually, he was, because I remember he had this one crazy drive with like a minute left, which I didn't know what he was doing. But yeah, like, you know, why not just use it as a development season? And they probably did later on in the year, but get some of these guys looks. Like even Calderon too. Like, I know he was a big part of some of those teams during the Chris Bosh era that made the playoffs. But at that point, if you're trying to turn the page too, like maybe he takes less of a role too. Although I'm just remembering that Anthony Carter was the team's backup point guard in this game. So I guess there was really nobody to turn the keys to. Like, the Raptors went from Vince Carter to Anthony Carter. And, you know, that's honestly, this game was just really sad, man, especially the fourth quarter. And talking about it with you now, I'm just really sad. Like, we got to just get to Lin hitting the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we'll definitely talk about that. But I wanted to focus on Anthony Carter because there's, you know, I don't want to like overstate how much of a Raptor fan I am. I'm sure there's been a lot of other people who have been huge Raptor fans. But, you know, I remember so many of these games, and I watched so many of these games intently. I was in university at the time, so all I would do is fire up illegal streams and watch these games in class. And, like, you know, yeah, it was maybe to the detriment of my social life that I watched so many of these games. And so what I'm saying this is because, like, I recognize so many random players. Like, when Rasul Butler came in, I'm like, yeah, I know him. or like Solomon Alibi or like Gary Forbes or whatever. I'm like, Jamal McGlory sitting on the bench. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah, you know, these Raptors, my team. I know these guys. When Anthony Carter checked into the game, I was legitimately like, who the hell is this? All right, why is there a Foot Locker employee on the floor? What's going on, man? I didn't realize, like, he had such a short neck, and, like, he just came in. Like, he's, like, the opposite of Terry Stotts, and, like, he just came in, and I just had no idea who he was. I had to really look it up, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. We had Anthony Carter as a backup point guard, and I remember, like, you know, I think the third stringer this year might have been John Lucas III. So, like, it wasn't even like this was a case where, Dwayne Casey overplayed him or something. Like, this is just the roster they had was... Oh, yeah, and Ben Uzo this year, of course. But, yeah, like, they had Anthony Carter. He came in, didn't really ever look at the basket. It was kind of sad. But, really, you know, the Raptors, despite us saying all these negative things, played a pretty good game by their standards in this game. Like, for example, defensively, they were pretty good. Like, holding the Knicks to only 90 points is pretty impressive. Like, it's still a Mike D'Antoni team, after all. They're still pretty good on offense. And they had a great chance to win. But they couldn't do it. Let's talk about the final shot now, then. Because, obviously, this is the only thing that anyone ever remembers from this game. To set it up, as you mentioned, you know, the Raptors were up 9 with 4 minutes left. Actually, the Raptors had a 17-point lead at one point in this game. So, really, they should have held this game. But it's tie game, 87-87. The Knicks have the ball with like 35 seconds left. Iman Shumpert, they trap Jeremy Lin. The ball swings over to Shumpert. Shumpert drives in and gets a wide open jumper, but he bricks it. Chandler, you know, at the time, he's very famous about just like the tap out rebound. He's very, very good at that. But he tipped it back out. And then now the clock is dead. You know, the Knicks have it. Shot clock's turned off. 87 all. Jeremy Lin looks over at Mike D'Antoni, who says, yo, I'm not going to call timeout. Just go ISO and score and get the game winner. I think he went ISO first off because the Raptors were doubling him. So if Jeremy Lin wanted to get a shot off, he probably shouldn't get a screen. He'd try to just attack. And yeah, I mean, you know, he winds the clock down with under 3 seconds left, about 2.5. Jeremy Lin sees that Jose Calderon is still backpedaling, which I don't understand for the life of me. He what I mean by this is that, like, Jose Calderon has maybe a foot. He has 1 foot, that's 1 foot above the free throw line. So he's so far back already. And I'm like, there's only 2 seconds left in the game. He's not driving. He's pulling up, and this game's either, you're either losing or you're going to overtime. But you should not be that far back on him. And yeah, Jeremy Lin sees this, and he basically has a wide open shot. And he pulls up for three. He hits it. Mike Breen yells bang, and yeah, that's the game winner. I mean, what were your emotions watching this back? And just be honest, like, who were you rooting for?
No, I think at the time, if you're Asian, you're definitely rooting for the Knicks and Jeremy Lin to get the win. I mean, the shot was incredible. And yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit later on about Calderon, because his defense on that play is probably going to cost him the first star. Wow. Of this game, or at least we might have to have a debate about it. And it was just really cool because there's that one angle from, you know, shot from where behind Jeremy was, where you can see the crowd behind the basket. Mm-hmm. And when that basket goes in, you can see all the fans, and like, they were all Asian behind the basket in that section, just being absolutely delirious. And, you know, the cheer that Jeremy got that day, mm-hmm, was like a K-pop cheer.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You could hear, it was just a different type of cheer. It was like something that you would hear at like a pop star concert, because there was just so many Asians in there. And mm-hmm, I was pulling up the some of the game notes from the game, and ESPN had mentioned that the Raptors put a photo of Lin on their website hours before the game. Just to, like, yo, honestly, using Jeremy Lin as clickbait, I respect it.
Yeah, we're doing it right now in 2020. I can't judge them for this.
And the CCYAA and the Taiwanese Canadian Association both sent over 300 fans to the game. And it was only the second sellout for the Raptors in 13 home games on the season to that point. And also there were 75 reporters there, mm-hmm, just at the morning practice to hear Lin talk, and more than 25 Chinese Canadian journalists covered the game, which would have just been incredible if we were there to see that.
Oh yeah.
And my favorite tidbit is that one of the Chinese journalists, according to ESPN, presented Lin with a book of Year of the Dragon stamps from Canada Post and asked him to record a message in Mandarin, which he did. And it just made me feel bad for Jeremy because this is really what he was dealing with at the time, right? Especially probably in New York with all the Chinese media that was there. So, you know, it was cool. I think Jeremy in a lot of ways was just like exhausted, you know, during this stretch because he obviously had never played this much at the NBA level. And you could tell that he was coming off that 8-for-24 game in Minnesota and he was really struggling in this game. But, you know, he had the ball in his hands at the end and he made the shot, which was amazing. But we also have to talk about how on the next possession, so the Raptors are down 3 and they have like 0.05 seconds left. Yep. And Rasul Butler, RIP by the way, passed away in a car accident a few years ago. So rest in peace. Mm-hmm. But in the context of this, it's hilarious because he doesn't play a minute in this game, just like in the Lakers game, the one before. And he's the one that ends up chucking this desperation shot at the buzzer. It's a brick and the Raptors lose. So you're telling me Rasul Butler, probably in the box score, is recorded as playing 0 minutes in back-to-back games and is responsible for the final possession on both?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at this exact box score right now. Rasul Butler is credited for 1 second of play. He has, obviously, the 1 3-pointer attempt. He has... yeah, I mean, again, I don't know what Dwayne Casey's thinking because he did do some good things defensively, but offensively, it seemed like this guy had no clue. First off, this should just be common sense, okay? I don't care if it's Ray Allen on the bench, if it's Steph Curry on the bench, if he hasn't played the whole entire game and there's 0.5 seconds left, you cannot be inbounding to this man and hoping that he ties the game. Like, I don't understand. And throw in the fact that Rasul Butler was a, you know, like a good 3-point shooter. Like, he was probably like a, maybe a Mo Pete level 3-point shooter. Maybe that's being even generous because Mo Pete was a pretty good 3-point shooter. Like, It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't even like the Raptors had a guy like that off the bench. First off, who they, I mean, you know, Jose, it might be a better option here. I mean, even Linus Klaza I would have preferred because he was at least in the game. But yeah, as you mentioned, man, this is dire times for the Raptors. And it was just honestly questionable decision making from Dwayne Casey where, you know, he was really trying to establish himself at this point. You know, this he had finally gotten hired. He obviously, you know, as you've written about before, Dwayne's, you know, had a very, you know, up and down career, took a very long winding road to finally get to the NBA, was definitely one of the most heralded assistant coaches. Obviously, got a lot of credit for designing that defense for the Mavericks in 2011 that beat the Heat. And, you know, he was really trying to make a name for himself. And, you know, seeing him get the ring, or, you know, before the game was actually really interesting to me because the only other time I've actually seen Dwayne Casey wear that ring was after game 4 against the Washington Wizards in 2015, which in which the Raptors lost in the sweep by a score of 125-94 after game 4 against the Wizards. And Dwayne Casey, at the post-game interview, was wearing the Mavericks ring. And very prominently, too. Like, he put it on his hands, and he put his hands on top of the table right in front of the microphone so everyone could see the ring. And two things. One, what the hell does that 2011 Mavericks title have anything to do with this Game 4 loss to the Wizards where you got swept? And two, why did he have it on hand already? Because they were all... This is only Game 4. This wasn't like the season-ending press conference where, you know, afterwards, they come back to Toronto, they reconvene, they get all the reporters together, and they ask him, and you can really prepare for your appearance. So you're telling me Dwayne Casey has so little confidence in his team that he brought this ring because he knew they were going to lose so that he could put this on as a shield somehow after the game? I don't understand it, but it's... Those are the only two times I've seen the Mavericks ring. And, yeah, wow.
I think, well, first of all, bringing your 2011 championship ring when your team's getting swept on the road is like the opposite of like Michael Jordan packing one suit against the Phoenix Suns in 93. I think that's just insecure Dwayne. I'm pretty sure he was just trying to send a message to Masai or remind people that, hey, we just lost to Randy Whitman holding the whiteboard upside down, but... Mm. You know, I am an NBA champion, and you shouldn't fire me. And Masai listened.
This is unbelievable. I thought for sure they were going to let him go after this year, but yeah, wow. Okay, back to this game. This really, really depressing game. You know, we're going to get to sort of the significance of Jeremy Lin and, you know, your personal experience watching this game and sort of just how we feel about it even now afterward. Let's get to the three stars first off for the Raptors. Okay, so you said Jose Calderon is not the first star for you, or it's a debate for you? Because he should be the first star.
He should be the first star based on what he did in the game, but he also got a game winner in his eye, though. And he also made that Asian slant eye photo with the Spanish national team. So, Will, I'm going to leave it up to you, man.
Okay, well, all right, you're definitely setting me up on that. well, listen, you know, I love the Raptors first and foremost.
How many statements do you have?
Yeah, I mean, look.
All right, there's no other option. Objectively, for this basketball game, mm-hmm. Jose Calderon's the first star.
Yeah, here's the thing: 25 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, a block in 39 minutes of play. He shoots 11 of 17 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3, including what may be the KFC bucket of the game, where the shot clock's running down, the ball swung to him. Jose doesn't realize it at first, sees the shot clock, throws up a prayer from 30 feet, and it goes in. And he's smiling, he flashes the numeral tres, like just the number threes on his hands and everything. And, you know, Herbie Coons obviously speaking Spanish, of course, at this point. And, yeah, like, he was the only reason the Raptors, you know, offensively were in a position to win this game. So it's unfortunate defensively that, you know, Jeremy just, you know, put the dagger in his eye. And, of course, Jose didn't really play any defense at all in that play. But, I mean, hell, this is 2011-12 Raptors, man. This is as good as you get. So he gets the first star. Second star, I might have to give this to Linus Klaza. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. I guess it's going to be Klaza and Barbosa, right?
I'm probably the third star. I may choose Amir Johnson just because he had 10 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 blocks, including one play where he blocks Amari twice at the rim. Back-to-back within, like, 3 seconds. It was kind of reminiscent of the the 1996 Chicago Bulls picking on Patrick Ewing.
Holy shit, man.
I'm suddenly an expert in the 90s now because I watched 6 episodes of the Jordan doc on illegal streams.
Yeah, are you bleeding in your Jordan 1s right now, or what's going on?
Yeah, I still got to paint that, but... yeah, like, this is... I mean, okay, so... To Linus Klaza's credit, I'm not really trying to gas him up, but he was good in this one. 15 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. He missed a bunch of free throws, which was odd, because he was a pretty good free throw shooter, but this was a good Linus Klaza game for sure. And, you know, he was making key buckets in the third quarter to give the Raptors a lead, some big second chance rebounds, so he gets a third star. And then, yeah, Barbosa, 13 points, or Amir Johnson, 10 points for 5 blocks. You take your pick.
Yeah, no, we can go with Amir. Can I go back to Jose Calderon for one more second?
Okay.
So I just pulled up an old article of Jose Calderon addressing his the Spanish men's basketball team's slanted eye photos. So he was asked about this actually by Martin Rogers of Yahoo Sports.
Oh, wow. Shout out.
And this is what Jose Calderon said. We did it because we thought it was going to be something nice, something with no problem. What? But somebody wants to talk about it. It's too much of a big deal with you guys. He's referencing the media and everyone talking about it. So that's all I'm saying, man. I guess still the first star in your eyes, William. Wow. And I just want to add, Pau Gasol added, some of us didn't feel comfortable doing it just because to me it was a little clownish on our part for doing that. But the sponsors insisted. I think it is just a bad idea, I guess, to do that. But it was never intended to be racist against anybody. So there we go. Jose Calderon, your first star.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, I can't do this on a Jeremy Lin pod. So, yeah, I mean, Jose Calderon getting the Patrick Patterson Award now. Never mind. That's unfortunate, man. And look, listen, I love Marc Gasol, but he's in that photo too.
Yeah, I've selectively left him out of this narrative.
I mean, I do believe Pau when he says he didn't intend it to be offensive, but like once you're told it's offensive, I don't think Jose Calderon's response should be it's not that big of a deal. Like,
and Jose's such a nice guy. Like, I would expect him to be a little bit more contrite about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I don't know.
It is what it is, man. That's unfortunate. Wow, damn. I guess he's still the first star, but only strictly speaking of basketball.
I see where you stand, but go on.
The Gerald Henderson Award for the surprising player on the other team that randomly lit up the Raptors. Is it Jeremy? Because it feels rude to give it to Jeremy because he's their best player, but is it Jeremy? Because there's no one else on the team that played well.
Yeah, no, I was looking at the box score. You know, Amari came up pretty big in the fourth quarter at least, but I think in that context, you do have to give it to Jeremy. Like, even though he was doing this on a nightly basis at the time, like, it was still a really brief run, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Linsanity was like
2 weeks.
Yeah, it's like a 2 week run, and it's wild because I was looking at Jeremy's career. Like, he only played 35 total games with the Knicks, like, ever. And it's become this thing, obviously, that's been immortalized. And it should be because of just the impact and the influence. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Jeremy should get it.
Yeah. No love for Billy Walker? Yeah. Come on, man. Billy Walker sounds like a St. Louis Cardinals first baseman that comes in to only hit to pinch hit against left-handed pitchers. Like,
yeah, no, he pinch runs for Mark McGwire in the eighth inning.
Yeah, like, what? Who the hell is Billy Walker? Again, another guy who, despite my avid fandom, I did not recognize and did not remember. I think he was briefly on the Heat, but I also looked it up now. Apparently, he changed his name to Henry in 2014. So he's no longer Bill Walker. He's Henry Walker, which, again, still sounds like a St. Louis Cardinals first baseman. Like,
yo, why is every fact on this podcast so sad about this game?
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, listen, Mike Bibby played 2 minutes in this game.
Yeah, I definitely don't remember that. Also, before you get to your other award, do you know about the Anthony Carter story of the time that his agent failed to exercise his player option?
It sounds familiar, but tell it. What's the story?
Yeah, so I think this was like 2004 season, mm-hmm. and the Heat were trying to go after certain guys in free agency, but they were over the cap, and they were just assuming that Carter, who I think averaged, here, I'm looking at this article, he averaged 4.1 points and 4.1 assists the year before, mm-hmm. so he wasn't like a huge contributor, and he had a $4 million player option, and his agent, Bill Duffy, just forgot to fax it in.
Wow.
So the player option just expired, and suddenly the $4 million opened the room up for Pat Riley to go and get free agents. And that was the summer that they got Lamar Odom, and I think traded for Caron Butler. I can't really remember, but like because of fact that his agent didn't fax it in, the Heat ended up being able to get free agents, which is hilarious.
And then didn't it flip Lamar Odom for Shaq? So.
Yeah, they did. So Anthony Carter set off the chain of events for the Heat to pair Shaq with Dwayne Wade to win the championship.
Yeah, that's incredible. And of course, Lamar ends up winning, becoming a legendary Laker as well. So, wow, what a story, man. Shout out Bill Duffy, I guess, for doing that. I mean, definitely one
shout
of the
big... Shout out Bill Duffy, and also, like, let's just not do faxes anymore, man. Like, I get it was 2004, but, like, man.
Well, I mean, listen. Any football fan listening to this would remember that there is a very infamous failed transfer that was supposed to go down between United and Real Madrid. That was like, when was it now? Maybe 2-3 years ago. Involving a star
was
player.
Was it Cafu?
It was it's not Cafu, man. What's wrong with you? Anyway, there was supposed to be a star player supposed to be transferred. Apparently, there was a fax machine issue, so they couldn't get it done before the deadline. It was like, you know, maybe not like 100 million, but maybe like 50 million pound kind of transfer, and it just didn't go through because of the facts. But of course, that was way worse because it was like 2017 as compared to like 2004. But to be honest, I didn't know people were still using faxes like that, but hey, man, do you? Okay. So the Patrick Patterson Award for the guy who didn't show up. I mean, to me, this is pretty obvious. I think it has to be DeMar. Now, if you look at DeMar's numbers, you're like, he didn't have that bad of a game. He has 14 points in 5 of 12 shooting. That's not that inefficient. He goes to the free throw line 4 times. But I'm telling you, when you watch this game, it looks a little bit like DeMar doesn't have any idea what he's doing on any possession because he just has no game plan. He's barreling to the basket. He commits 6 turnovers for a guy who doesn't have the ball much. And it was like at least 2 of those were charges. And it was just really jarring to see how polished he is now versus how just inexperienced he was back then. Because he was just, again, like, was not a very good player at this point.
Oh, definitely. I think DeMar is the obvious choice. He, and like you said, it really gives you an appreciation of how hard he worked on his craft year to year to become the player that he was. He did not look like an NBA player on the floor. Like, you could have told someone that this guy was just signed to a 10-day contract, and I would have believed you.
Yo, this was, yeah, I mean, I didn't want to say this was an Allen Anderson performance, because I think Allen Anderson would have been more composed than this. Like, it was bad. I don't want to say it was a playoff DeMar kind of performance, but in a certain way, like, it had that kind of stubbornness, that kind of just, like, forcing things that weren't there, and, you know, some of these elements were just tough. I mean, DeMar was, like, in his second or third year at this point, so, I mean, it's totally normal that he was inexperienced, and he came into the league as a 19-year-old, so whatever. But yeah, it was not a great game for DeMar. So let's circle back to the significance of Linsanne and things like that. You know, for you, even watching it back now, like, you get the hype, right? Like, you see the excitement. Like, you see how big of a deal it was. This was, like, when we say this is, like, the biggest deal in sports for that month, it's true. It really is true. Like, it's the amount of hype surrounding it was crazy. Like, I was watching I was watching episode 5 of the MJ doc yesterday, and they were showing, like, just MJ's lifestyle, and, you know, he's swarmed by all these reporters. He can't really go anywhere. He's playing, like, flip a coin with security guards. Like, it's unbelievable. I wonder if Kawhi ever played flip a coin with Zoe.
Wow, how did Zoe make it into a classic reaction pod?
You know, Zoe was probably at this game, man. But yeah, like, you know, it reminded me a little bit of that for Jeremy. Like, okay, obviously Jeremy and Michael Jordan are entirely different things, but I'm telling you, for that, like, 2-week period, he was basically getting Michael Jordan type treatment media wise. As you mentioned, there were, like, 70 media people at the game.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's hilarious that after you watch The Last Dance, you're going to compare every single thing to the 9 things that you know about Michael Jordan now, which I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how it was for you. I think you had mentioned that you were in university at the time. Like, man, I remember just, like, every single Knicks game. First of all, they moved all the broadcasts, so I think they were showing all the games on NBA TV or making sure that it was going to be available. And I remember he played, like, the Wizards on, like, a Monday night, and it would be like a Super Bowl. Like, I would plan my entire day around it, you know, get, like, a special order of food from I guess I should mention places because of your sponsors. And it was just, every night was an event. And it was one of those things where you just kept waiting for it to end because it wasn't like I think part of us all knew that this was not going to be something, like, he wasn't going to average, like, 27 points per game forever. But when he starts showing up on Time Magazine and on back-to-back Sports Illustrated covers and he becomes the only thing, and, like, you know, there's rumors of him, like, dating Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
Like, these are these are things that were just unheard of for an Asian athlete, right? And he, like, he was the biggest story in the world. Like, just think about
it.
Like, he was the biggest story in the world, and it was just amazing to see him, like, just keep doing it game to game. Like, the Lakers game, which we're going to tackle at some point, like, that was incredible. And this game winner here, even though the game was terrible, it just kept adding to the mythology. It honestly, it was just a surreal experience watching him. And, you know, as, you know, both of us are Asian, obviously, like, it was just, it was just such a proud moment to see someone like him on that stage, and probably even prouder now because listening to his recent interviews now and seeing how Jeremy has matured, like, with his recent article that he wrote about COVID-19 in the Players Tribune, and he did a podcast last week with Howard Beck talking about how tough it was for him during Linsanity because everybody wanted something from him. Like, like, everybody was trying to get a piece of him. I remember there were so many unauthorized books that were published and pushed out. I'm honestly surprised I didn't write one. I guess I wasn't in writing at the time because I definitely would have put one out, like, 3 days after he beat the Lakers. But it's just cool for him, honestly, to have that perspective now, because for the longest time, he just didn't want to be only associated with Linsanity. Like, I remember a quick story, like when I was covering the Nets in New York, and Jeremy had signed with the Nets a few years after Linsanity. I had requested an interview with him, and the PR person specifically told me, like, don't mention the word Linsanity or ask about it at all, because he doesn't want to talk about any of it. So it's cool that he's reached a point now where he's willing to really embrace it and revisit it. And anytime these highlights come on, man, like, I don't know how many times you've gone on YouTube or anywhere else to, like, watch the highlights against the Lakers. Like, that corner three still gives me chills. And this game winner still gives me chills. Like, I could go on forever. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah. And I know it sounds – I think, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of had to be there to truly experience it as well. Because in retrospect, we're, like, talking about a guy who had the best 2 weeks of his life. And, it, you know, we should be able to put that into context. But I think the context is correct here. Like, he was that big of a deal. Like, first up, I make this point all the time, but if you go up to the average person in the, I don't know, North American sphere or maybe in Europe or whatever, and you ask them, like, hey, name five Asian people, like, literally Jeremy Lin will be one of the five Asian people. And honestly, I think a lot of people probably couldn't get to five. And if you are one of those people, this doesn't apply to you, so don't be offended. But I just mean that, like, literally the average person probably can't name beyond, like, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Yao Ming, and Jeremy Lin. Like, literally, Jeremy Lin is going to be in that top five. So he was that big of a deal at the time. And, you know, there was a certain sense of pride, you know, for me. You know, when I was watching this game, for example, I obviously, at the time, I'm a huge Raptor fan. I'm watching it even though they're playing Linus Klaser 40 minutes. And I'm cheering my heart out for them. But at the same time, when he hit it, I have very conflicted emotions because obviously I'm so pissed that the Raptors gave up this game. They just given up a game to the Lakers before this. So I'm like, we need these games. But at the same time, like, seeing what Jeremy did, like, I was very proud, you know, as an Asian person, I was very proud because again, there's just not that much visibility, for Asians, especially not back in 2012. And to see Jeremy, what he was doing, like, he really was carrying the expectations of, I don't know, man, when you total up, like, East Asia and, you know, Southeast Asia, and you put it all together, like, there's probably, like, 2 billion Asian people, and, like, I'm not saying all 2 billion people were watching Jeremy Lin that intently, because people got other things to do other than watching New York Knicks basketball, but, like, it was that was the scale of expectations put onto Jeremy, and for him, like, I could see why he would want to focus on his basketball, because to think about that responsibility and that kind of representation on that kind of scale at the time when he was probably, like, what, a 23-year-old trying to make it into the NBA who was sleeping on Landry Fields' couch, like, yeah, you probably can't take in the gravity of the thing. But I really appreciate, you know, as you said, like, the fact that Jeremy has matured, his career, his NBA career has probably passed him by already. But he's really taken that time to go back and really take on that responsibility, I think, especially as one of those important figures. Again, obviously, he's not that noteworthy anymore based on his career. But to me, he's still incredibly noteworthy because he's very conscious about his place in the world. He's very conscious about him being, you know, Taiwanese-American and, you know, all the sort of struggles that comes with that. And it's just such a hard position for him to be in. And he does it with grace, and he does it willingly now, and he takes on the responsibility. So I have so much respect for Jeremy, and, you know, that's why I was so excited when the Raptors signed Jeremy Lin last year. Like, it was incredible that they just, like, holy shit, Jeremy Lin's going to be on the Raptors. Like, for me, it wasn't even necessarily about the basketball. Obviously, the Raptors had just traded DeLon Wright, so they needed a point guard. But at the same time, I'm just like, I've always wanted to see one of my favorite players who represents so much to play on my favorite team. And I'm so happy that he won the ring. Like, I don't care that he struggled so much. I don't care that he wasn't a factor in the playoffs. It's still significant to me. And when I see those pictures of him wearing a Toronto Raptors jersey holding the championship, I'm like, this is literally a picture of everything I've ever wanted out of basketball. And it happened.
Yeah. You know, people should check out a New York Times feature by Alex Wong about why Jeremy Lin winning the championship means everything to Asians. And, you know, I was joking when the Raptors picked up Jeremy, that I was more excited about that than when the Raptors traded for Kawhi. And, you know, I was probably only half joking. Like you probably relate to me, like, just on a personal level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Knowing that he was going to be part of the team was just so incredible. And professionally, local radio stations finally acknowledged me and needed an agent to talk about Jeremy Lin. So I was able to rack up some checks for a great 3-day period.
Well, we should throw in the caveat that I had picked that exact moment to go out of the country. I was going to Bogota. And so literally I was at the airport when the trade broke, and so I wasn't able to write and react to it because I was in a different country, and this created a great opportunity for the number two Asian in Toronto basketball.
The number two Raptors personality.
Holy shit.
It's funny because the Lin thing reminds me the most of, like, the biggest comparison I have is to the Freestyle Fridays that MC Jin had when he had that incredible run. And it was super cool because Jin came to a Raptors game last year wearing a Lin jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the game where, was it Jeremy Lamb hit the game winner?
Oh my God.
From half court.
Which one? Because he did it twice.
So, one of those. And I had a chance to talk to Jin after the game backstage, and he was so excited to know that Lin was going to be on a championship team, a team that was going to contend. And it's just cool to see, because that just really illustrates, like, it's not just people like us. Like, you look at just like celebrities or people in pop culture, like you mentioned, like Jeremy Lin became like an access point for a lot of those people to get into basketball. Like, there are a lot of Asian basketball fans who are Jeremy Lin fans and not NBA fans, and that is honestly a super cool thing. And I'm gonna save the rest of my thoughts for my own podcast.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, you can definitely hear us react to the Knicks-Laker game again, the game where Jeremy Lin puts 38 on Derek Fisher to beat the Lakers. But yeah, look, listen. I know, again, if you weren't Asian and if you weren't there to see it, it sounds ridiculous in retrospect. But it seriously was that important, in terms of his career. And listen, like, sports is culture. Like, basketball specifically is very culturally relevant. And for anybody to even get that kind of spotlight is incredible. And it was very important. And Jeremy's always carried it with grace. So shout out Jeremy Lin. I just wanted to throw in some context here from real published quoted articles in places like the LA Times and CBC. In terms of fans talking about this game, quote, Lin is smart, he plays smart, says Yen. Quote, he knows when to do the right thing, like Steve Nash. Think of him like a younger Steve Nash. When I see him play, he reminds me of Steve Nash. This is a real
quote. Who said this?
This is quoted in like CBC. I think this guy was one of the leaders of one of the Toronto Taiwanese clubs or something here in Toronto. So, yeah, he was quoted as saying that. And then another one in the LA Times that I found, people were obviously circling around and they got their whole families together to watch basketball. And this group of Taiwanese Americans and Chinese friends who got together were chanting SAT, SAT at the TV while Jeremy Lin played, which honestly, I could totally see it.
Oh, man.
I could totally see it. And then, of course, you know, in this game in particular, the signs that people had for this game were just amazing. Like, someone wrote to Linsanity or Linfinity and Beyond with Jeremy, you know, superimposed on Buzz Lightyear. Jeremy Lin on a Photoshop version of the 2K13 cover. And, you know, Be My Valentine. Like, all the puns. Like, yeah, there were a lot of great signs and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I do have some just random notes from watching the game that you might enjoy. The listeners might enjoy. So the one thing, so anybody, if you can find the MSG Network feed for this game, I highly recommend watching it, just because honestly, the Knicks are kind of spoiled, even though they're a trash team now, of having Mike Breen and Clyde Frazier. Like, they're a great duo to listen to on the broadcast. And honestly, I hope the Knicks get good again, if only so then they can actually call good games again. So Jeremy says, he was asked during the morning practice that day what his favorite Lin pun was, and he went with Super Nintendo because he played Super Nintendo growing up, which I was just cringing. Number
you
two,
know what? You were cringing because this was so on point and spot on for an Asian American, because you knew someone who was not Jeremy Lin maybe you knew like a friend, or maybe even you yourself would have given that exact answer. You know what I mean? That hit the perfect spot of just like, he's definitely one of us. You know, as an Asian American, like, no, you're probably playing Super Nintendo. Like, I don't know, man. That's
no, I've, you know what? I've been playing a lot of Super Nintendo during this quarantine. So you're exactly right. Mm. The other thing, the hologram sign that was on the baseline, amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, now that we're on the point of broadcast, it was so corny. After every single opposing team would come to Toronto, they would, because the Raptors are getting blown up by 20, so they had the banter, and they'd be like, look at that 3D sign over there. I'm always worried about players tripping over it. And I'm just like, bro, you think you're the first person to tell this joke? Like, literally 29 other teams come to Toronto and tell this shit. So, yeah, definitely Mike Breen and Clyde Frazier went for that joke.
In the first quarter, Mike Breen talks about Jeremy Lin and says that he's humble. He's not putting guns in the holster when he makes a three, which I thought was hilarious. Mike Breen just pushing the model minority myth on everyone.
Oh my God.
Just amazing. And then Mike Breen, I guess Jared Jeffries was the Patrick Patterson of the Knicks, because Mike Breen was really pushing the Jared Jeffries propaganda throughout. You know, at one point in the first quarter, out of nowhere, he's just like, Jared Jeffries has become one of the best help defenders in the league. And I'm not sure what prompted that. And then in a random third quarter possession, Breen just goes, look at how Jeffries just showed and recovered. And yeah, I don't know, maybe they shared the same agent, but there was a lot of propaganda going on.
Yeah, that was definitely some Patrick Patterson propaganda, because he was making a lot of plays that don't go in the box score while getting 8 points and five rebounds. So
And fun fact about this game, well, Nav Bhatia is courtside as usual, but he's wearing a full suit. Like, did he have a meeting at the dealership before, or was that just what he wore back then?
Well, as opposed to what he wears now, which he looks exactly, like, all love to Nav, but he looks exactly like that meme of how do you do, fellow kids?
Oh, yeah, because like, now he wears like jerseys and sneakers.
Yo, you're 60 years old. He's wearing a bomber jacket with like skin tight jeans and like glitter on his Raptor shoes. And I'm like, yo, this is swag. But at the same time, like, you're 60. Like, wow. I can't imagine my dad wearing that.
Yeah, love to see my own future.
Wow. Okay.
In the third quarter, they really talk up that Mike D'Antoni can't sit down and he's just standing up for most of the game because he's coaching through back spasms. Mm. So shout outs to Mike D'Antoni. And honestly, in the context of Linsanity, I honestly have to give D'Antoni a lot of credit for just rolling with Lin the way that he did. I know he had no choice, but maybe another coach doesn't dust him off the bench in that game against the Nets, which really started the whole Linsanity thing. Shout outs to, there's a segment, the KFC bucket chart.
Yep.
On the MSG network. So further proof that KFC is the official food of basketball.
That's right.
Yeah. And lastly, when Aaron Gray and Tyson Chandler get into a tussle at some point in the third quarter, Clyde Frazier out of nowhere just goes, Gray and Chandler are kung fu fighting. So, I don't know if, I mean, I'm probably just really sensitive, but I was just like, okay, like, is this because it was Linsanity, or what's going on?
Yo, that's amazing. It probably was. Let's be real. It probably was. Like, this is... Yeah. Honestly, you know, a weird game for Mike Breen. You know, he does call... He uses the bang call for Jeremy Lin when he hits the three, which is great. And it's Mike Breen, so definitely one of the best play-by-play guys in the NBA, if not the very best. But, yeah, at the same time, he definitely had some corny lines in this one. I always like to watch Knicks games partially because of Clyde as well. He always uses like very, you know, just he's like a thesaurus out there, you know. So he says pugnacious. He goes the phrase. I think after that fight, he says make love, not war. Which I'm just like, yo, that's great. Let's just drop that in there. Make love, not war.
Yeah, the Raptors had like 9 turnovers in the fourth, and at one point he's just like, oh, they're fumbling and bumbling.
Yep.
Like, it's great.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it really is like, oh, why am I hearing Dr. Seuss call my basketball game? Isolate and devastate, you know?
Honestly, they're the only silver lining about the Knicks right now.
Yeah. Honestly, that's the only reason to watch. Like, I'm rooting for RJ Barrett. I want him to make it. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, there is not a good reason to watch that team. Like, they're gassing up, like, Frank... Natalia Kina, and I'm like, wow, okay, cool.
Next, Rodrigue Bobois, who also got a shout out in the pregame of this broadcast.
Yeah, we should actually say that for a second, because they were asking before the game. They interviewed Dwayne Casey, and Dwayne's like, oh, I knew about Jeremy Lin in 2010, because he was one of the Mavericks coaches on the Summer League team, and Jeremy Lin actually played for the Mavericks 2010 Summer League team. And Dwayne Casey's compliment was, Lin was so good, he outplayed Rodrigue Bobois. Which meant a lot back then. I guess in 2020, it doesn't mean anything. But back then, it was a big compliment.
Bro, Rodrigue Bobois was like untouchable at one point. Like, it was him and Dirk Nowitzki that the Mavericks would not trade. Like, in any trade talks. Like, he was the next guy.
Rodrigue Bobois. Yeah, I mean, he had some game, I guess. But, like, yeah, it just wasn't... It just didn't really happen for him like that.
Yeah, but shouts to the broadcast, man. Honestly... Mm-hmm. Without Clyde and Mike Breen, this would have been an unwatchable game, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even watching it back was a little tough. Obviously, the ending is great, but the whole course of the game was really tough. But listen, the 2011-12 Raptors, like, it... I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think we're going to do a lot more games in terms of the Classic Reaction Podcast from this season. I think I've had enough. I'm already pretty disgusted. The guys that I missed out on this game were Andrea, who I really, really dislike. Jared Bayless, Gary Forbes, Ben Uzo. I might do the Ben Uzo game. That actually kind of is kind of fun, you know.
You should do the Ben Uzo game. I think you should do the Vince Carter slam dunk contest.
Yeah, that'd be good. That's a good suggestion, because the Ben Uzo game is definitely it's just the ramifications of that one, man. Because if the Raptors if they lost that game, they might have gotten Damian Lillard in the draft, but instead they slipped to, I think, the 9th pick and took Terrence Ross. And of course, the Terrence Ross pick gave us the What About DeRozan reaction video, so that's pretty great. And Terrence Ross eventually became Serge Ibaka, who became a champion, and now has become like a great media personality for the Raptors. But at the same time, like, yeah, they could have got Dame Lillard if they just lost this game where Ben Uzo has a random dirty ass triple double with like 10% shooting and Solomon Alibi has 19 rebounds. But
no, wow. You have to do that one. I was thinking you should do Vince's All-Star game where he gives up his starting spot for Michael Jordan. Oh man, I keep forgetting that you don't know anything before 2015. Vince was the leading vote getter, and this was Jordan's last season with the Wizards. This was the one you've seen the photos of Mariah Carey in the Wizards dress.
Oh,
serenading
yes.
Michael.
Yeah, and wasn't she singing the national anthem?
Yeah.
But she gave the Fergie version?
Yeah. So Vince, this was like after the Vince Sixers series, and he was kind of, his public image was not that great because he was injured a lot. And people were just like saying that he wasn't meeting expectations, but because of his famous dunk contest, he still was the leading vote getter that year, even though, like, I think he played in maybe like 15 games because he was hurt. And there was all this public pressure before the All-Star game for Vince to give up his spot for Michael, who was a reserve, and Vince wouldn't do it. And then at the very last minute, when the starting intros are being made, he tells Michael that he's going to give up his spot. It was this whole awkward thing. Maybe you can do a whole thing around that and actually watch the All-Star game, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's stuff that you can actually get video of. Like, I'm thinking about the Solomon Alibi, like, Ben Uzo game. Like, finding video on the 2012 Raptors is pretty much impossible.
Yeah, you might just have to read the play-by-play.
Yeah. I mean, there might not even be that.
Oh man!
Yeah,
there's just not a lot of Raptors. There's not a lot of Raptors memories, man.
There aren't that many. Let's be real, there aren't that many. But I love this team, and you know, we got to do it. So that does it for the podcast. Alex, thanks for coming on. As you mentioned, we are going to be doing the follow up version of this, where we recap Linsanity versus the Lakers on your podcast, Stephen LeBron Radio. Why don't you tell people what Stephen LeBron Radio is and some of the strange episodes that you've worked on or have coming out this week?
Yeah, Stephen LeBron Radio is just a daily podcast that I've started while sports is suspended. So feel free to check it out on iTunes and Spotify. Will is a guest. weekly at least. He has done a lot of charity work that I really appreciate. You know, I've just been interviewing people and diving into concepts and things that I've always wanted to do. Like, I watched Friends for the very first time with our Yahoo colleague Ashley Hufford and did an episode about it. Will and I recorded
Elite
an episode.
Episode.
Will and I recorded an episode that will release later this week about favorite Chinese bakery items. Because, you know, we've gotten a lot of requests for Asian content. So, yeah, I'm just looking to, like, just interview people, chat with my friends. And honestly, it's a cool thing for me to do just to give me a routine. It's just recording podcasts and then playing poker on Saturday, you know?
Yeah, that seems to be your whole life. And I seem to be involved in actually every aspect of it. So, you know, I feel very connected to you in this moment. And that's a good reminder to for people to stay socially connected, but physically distant.
Wow. Okay. Teresa Tam over here. Let's go on. And also, if you're into The Last Dance and you're just finding out about Michael Jordan, like Will, I'm also doing a 10-part podcast right now with Russ Bankson called After The Last Dance. We're recapping and talking about some behind-the-scenes stuff from each episode. So all those episodes drop on Sunday, and it was featured on Spotify's podcast page last week. So that was super cool, and the feedback has been cool. So if you want to learn more about The Last Dance and Michael Jordan's career, check that out too.
Oh, I can't wait, man. I can't wait. And of course, watch Run It Back, you know, which we're still doing on YouTube, still doing big-ish numbers, you know.
No, I appreciate everyone who watches Run It Back. Shout out Will Chan. We're going to shout out Will Chan podcast now. Shout out Will Chan. And yeah, this week's episode, for those that have been following, I've got the box scores and game recaps for Game 5 and Game 6 of Raptors-Bucks Eastern Conference Finals. And then I've got a little surprise for you for Game 7 next week.
Oh, okay. All right. So we know what's going to Game 7, so that's good. Because the series currently is tied 2-2 in your hypothetical, detailing. All right,
yeah,
cool.
I'm really running out of things. Like, I incorporated like Dante DiVincenzo into Game 6.
Okay.
So
why is Cash calling in?
Yeah. Anyways, it's cool to be making 98% of my content with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. All right, that does it for the podcast. Thanks everyone for listening to the Classic Raptors Reaction Podcast. If you have any other games, please suggest them to me on Twitter. Direct message me. Ideally, probably that's probably the best way I'll see it. I appreciate everyone for listening. And of course, later this week, I'll have another episode of the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My idea for this week is kind of going back and revisiting where every single player on the roster would go in a redraft, because the Raptors have done an exceptional job of drafting their players and developing them into a championship team. So look out for that later this week. But for now, thank you, Alex, and we'll be back later this week.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started. Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book HostRed sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.